Okay, welcome back to Understanding Childhood Cancer. I'm Dr. Jeff, and this is my podcast that's mostly for parents of children with cancer and leukemia, but it's also for anyone else who's involved in caring for a child with cancer or leukemia. And this is my third clinical trials episode, so you should really listen to the other two first. So there was clinical trials one, that was an introduction to what is a clinical trial. And then in clinical trials two, it was about phase one trials. So you really need to have listened to that one. But phase one trials were those studies where a drug had never been given to human beings before, and so a trial was done to work out if it was safe to give to people, and then what dose of the drug should you use. And that episode talked about phase one trials in adults, where they started with a teeny tiny dose and gradually gave higher and higher doses until they worked out what dose started to cause severe side effects. And then it talked about pediatric phase one studies. And they didn't need to start at such a teeny tiny dose in those studies because we already knew the dose you could give to adults. So they started at a somewhat reduced dose and built up the dose to find out the dose that was suitable for giving to children. But eventually, in the phase one study, we came up with something called the maximum tolerated dose. And that was the dose that you could give to children, and less than 2 out of 6 of them would get side effects that were judged to be severe. So that was called the maximum tolerated dose. And generally speaking, that's the dose that then gets labelled as the recommended phase 2 dose. So the phase 1 study is used to work out what drug dose should you use in the next phase of investigating and developing a drug. So what is the recommended phase 2 dose? And that's what I'm going to talk about today, the conduct of a phase 2 study. So just to put it all in perspective again, imagine you've got a brand new drug that you've invented and you've tested it in test tubes and you've tested it in mice. Well, what you ultimately want to be able to show is that this is a drug that is safe to give to humans and that it's better than the current treatments that are out there. So for any given condition, and I'm not just talking about cancer here, but for any given condition, there might be a treatment out there that's the standard treatment. Well, as you bring your drug to human beings, first you want to show that it's safe to give to people. You want to fine-tune the dose that you should give to people. Then you want to show that the drug actually does something good in that disease. And then eventually, after you've shown that it does some good for that disease, well, then you want to compare it to the existing treatment, to the standard treatment. So if there's an existing treatment for ingrown toenails and you've got a new treatment for ingrown toenails, well, eventually you'll want to do a phase 3 study that looks at comparing your new treatment to the existing treatment for ingrown toenails. So that's what you do. You go through the phase 1 study to work out the safety and the dose, the phase 2 study to establish if the drug actually does anything useful, and then the phase 3 study to show that it's better than the existing treatments. So to phase 2 studies. So in a phase 2 study of a cancer drug, what we're looking to see is whether the drug has any activity against cancer. And when we say it has activity against cancer, we mean it does something to reduce cancer, to kill cancer, to shrink cancer, to make leukemia reduce, to make leukemia go into remission maybe. So we want to see, does the drug do something in the short term? So we're not giving the drug and seeing how many people does it cure for 5 or 10 or 20 years. We want to know that, of course. But in a phase 2 study, what we're predominantly looking at is what happens in the first weeks and months after you give this drug. So what happens to the cancer? Does it improve in some way? So often the primary endpoint of the study is the tumour response rate. So primary endpoint, that means what's the main thing we're measuring in this trial to work out if the drug is useful or not? And the primary endpoint for a phase 2 study will often be something to do with a tumor response. And a response means a reduction in the cancer or leukemia. First of all, I want to talk about what sort of patients might participate in a phase 2 trial. Remember I said that in a phase 1 trial, the patients who would participate would generally be patients who have had their cancer or leukemia treated with the standard treatments, and then those treatments have not worked. So the cancer relapsed or it kept growing, so the existing treatments weren't working, and so eventually the patient was considered for a phase 1 study. Well, a similar situation would apply to patients who might go on a phase 2 trial. Most of the time, patients who are going to go on a phase 2 trial will have some sort of cancer or leukemia, and they will have had the standard treatment for the cancer or leukemia, and it hasn't worked. So similar to the phase 1 trial, they've had that treatment, and maybe it worked for a while, but then the cancer relapsed or it started growing again, or maybe it just didn't work at all and the cancer or leukemia just grew during the treatment. So generally speaking, patients going into a phase 2 study have had some sort of frontline therapy. That's what we call the first therapy, some sort of frontline therapy. And they may have had some second line sort of therapy, but eventually they will have got to a situation where effective treatment options don't seem to be available, and then they might be considered to see if they want to participate in a phase 2 trial and try some new drug or some new combination of drugs. And so generally, to go on to a phase 2 trial in cancer, it would usually mean that there wasn't an effective treatment out there for the cancer or leukemia. So if you imagine someone with, say, Hodgkin's disease, Hodgkin's lymphoma, well, for instance, at initial diagnosis, we would treat them with chemotherapy, let's say, and perhaps that worked, but then the lymphoma started growing again. Well, in that situation, we would still have another treatment up our sleeve often, and that would be radiation therapy. So we might give radiation therapy. Now, if the lymphoma grew back again, and we've given chemotherapy and we've given radiotherapy, well, in that situation, we might say, this is bad. We need something else. We don't have a further treatment that we consider sufficiently effective. It's time to consider going on an experimental therapy, and a phase 2 trial might be the way to access and evaluate an experimental therapy. So it's not always the case that a phase 2 trial is used at the time of a first relapse, but generally speaking, it is at the time of relapse or tumor progression and when the effective therapies that we know about have been exhausted. There's a couple of exceptions to that situation. The first is with those types of cancer where we just don't have effective therapies. There are some cancers, a few, in children, where the treatments we have are not very effective at all. And in that situation, a patient may be able to go into a phase 2 trial evaluating an experimental therapy right at the time of initial diagnosis. So if the existing therapies are just ineffective, then you might be able to go into a phase 2 trial without having some other form of treatment first. The second situation to mention is something called a phase 2 window trial. These were more fashionable about, 10 years ago, but you still see them from time to time. And this form of trial is one where we're going to treat the cancer with the effective combination of drugs that we have. And so we have treatment that may be effective, but it's still a high-risk tumor. Well, in those situations, what we did for a while, and we still do sometimes, is we would give the experimental treatment for the initial few weeks of treatment. So imagine we give the new drugs for 4 or 6 or 8 weeks, and then we embark on the standard normal treatment. So there's this sort of window period at the start where we're conducting a phase 2 study and then adding in all the standard normal therapies. So we could look for a tumor response from the new drugs and then go on to the standard therapy. So there are a couple of rare exceptions. Most of the time when we're going on to a phase 2 study, it's in a situation where the existing treatments have been tried and they haven't worked. So in these situations, it may be that the patient's doctors approach the family and say, look, we have a phase 2 trial open. It's a study of a new drug or a new combination of drugs. Would you like to participate in the trial? And if the family's interested, then they can read all of the information sheets that are normally produced for trials and get all the details and hear about the side effects that might be expected, any prospects for benefit, their rights in participating in a trial, the procedures associated with the trial, all sorts of things. And then if a family wants to participate, then they would sign the consent forms and then the patient could be enrolled. Now, the patient would have to meet all the eligibility criteria, of course. They would have to have the right tumor type for the particular trial. They would have to have had the standard therapies for the disease and then the tumor progressed, but they would also have to have some standard level of normal function of the heart and the lungs and the kidneys and the bone marrow and the liver, so be in a good enough condition to be treated on the trial. But having satisfied all of the eligibility criteria and consented to be enrolled on the study, then they could commence treatment with whatever the experimental combination is. And it might be a tablet, or it might be a drug that's given in a drip, and it might be a drug that's given every day or every month or whatever it is. Now, the advantage in a phase 2 study compared to a phase 1 study is that in a phase 2 study, we've already worked out what is the right dose to be using. Well, we've worked it out roughly at least. We've done a phase 1 study. We've eliminated all the tiny, tiny doses that might not be effective, and we've eliminated the doses that are too high and are associated with excessive side effects. So we've fine-tuned the dose in the phase 1 study, so the patients that go onto the phase 2 study have the advantage of having a dose that's been worked out accurately, and we'll know what sort of side effects to be looking out for in particular. So there are some advantages to a phase 2 study over a phase 1 study. In a typical phase 2 study, the patient will receive the treatment for a period of time. For instance, 2 cycles of treatment, might be 6 or 8 weeks of treatment with the experimental combination. And then we'll look to see whether there's been a disease response. And a disease response means that the cancer or the leukemia has improved. So how do you measure for a disease response? In solid tumors, most of the time you look for a disease response by measuring the size of the tumor. So it may be that the tumor can be felt from outside the body and dimensions can be measured with a tape measure. But more often we end up needing to do CT scans or MRI scans, and then we can measure the size of the tumor deposit, or deposits, plural, and see if the disease has decreased in size following the experimental treatment. And there's all sorts of ways for measuring the tumors and determining what constitutes a response. In some studies, we used to measure the largest horizontal dimension of the tumor, and then we'd measure the largest dimension at right angles to that, and then we'd multiply the two together and we'd get a sort of area figure for the size of the tumor. Then we'd give the drug treatment, and then we'd do all of that again, and if we saw a 50% reduction in the area, well, that was called a partial response. If the tumor went away completely and we couldn't see it at all, that was called a complete response. If it didn't change much in size at all, well, that was called stable disease. And if it got more than 25% bigger, that was called progressive disease. So they were the main ways we described a tumour response. We could have a complete response or a partial response, or we may see stable disease, or the worst one was to see progressive disease. Other systems exist. There's one where you don't multiply the two dimensions of the tumour, but you just measure it along its longest dimension. And then I think it's a 30% reduction in the longest dimension, and that's called a partial response in that situation. So there's different ways of measuring tumours on scans according to the trial you're in. And then there's other diseases like neuroblastoma, where there may be abnormalities on the MIBG scan, and so you may count up, you know, the number of hot spots on the MIBG scan, and you may look at the bone marrow, and you may look at the urinary catecholamines, and all sorts of other things. So in neuroblastoma, there's a specific list of international neuroblastoma response criteria. And then in lymphoma, there's another set of those response criteria. So depending on the type of tumour, there are ways of measuring the overall amount of tumour that's present, and then you can look for a reduction in the amount of tumour, and you'll have a definition for what's a partial response and what's a complete response, etc. In leukemia, there are different ways of measuring things. It's normally based on the number of circulating leukemia cells in the bloodstream, and then a bone marrow test to look at the percentage of leukemia cells in the bone marrow. And again, there's all sorts of technical definitions for what constitutes a response, what constitutes stable disease, and what constitutes progressive disease. But eventually, whatever the phase 2 trial is, the usual situation is that we end up with a determination of the response in an individual patient. And then after we've enrolled enough patients, well, then we can determine something called the response rate. Now, in phase 2 studies, we enroll more patients than we do in phase 1 studies normally. So in the phase 1 study, you'll remember we were just enrolling 3 patients at a time at a given dose level and steadily increasing the dose until we worked out the right dose and what the side effects were. So in a phase 1 study, you don't tend to need so many patients. In a phase 2 study, it depends on the nature of the underlying disease and a few other factors, but a phase 2 study might have as few as 30 or 40 patients, or up to just a few hundred patients, I suppose. But however many are enrolled in the study, eventually we will have a response rate. So we may be able to say that the complete and partial response rate was 48% or 27%. And what to call a good response rate and what to call an ineffective response rate will vary from tumour type to tumour type. There have been some bad tumours over the years, and so at the first sign of even a low response rate, 10-15% for instance, that was seen as an encouraging outcome. For some other diseases, you might look to see something higher in the way of a response rate. But when the phase 2 study is designed, there will be a definition of what level of response will be considered to be an effective response rate. So what response rate will be considered to indicate that the drug is active against that sort of cancer? And then if the drug is shown to be active against that sort of cancer in this phase 2 study, well, in those situations, it may be that the drug is considered for a phase 3 study, so a new study to follow in a new group of patients, and the phase 3 study will compare this new treatment to existing therapies. But I'll talk about phase 3 studies in another episode of this podcast series. The primary endpoint for most phase 2 studies is indeed tumour response, so we're looking at a short to medium term improvement in the cancer. But a secondary endpoint, so another thing that we're very interested in, of course, is what happens after that. Now, if the patient has a response or has stable disease, so if the cancer doesn't get any worse, then in many phase 2 studies, the treatment with the experimental therapy might continue, and it might continue until the tumour does grow. So it may be that the drug can continue for months and months or over a year or more, depending on the particular situation. All of these things get worked out in the study design. So the patient might continue on the treatment for a prolonged period, provided the cancer doesn't grow. And so along with reporting responses in the phase 2 study, we will also end up reporting the duration of the responses. So if the cancer decreased in size and then it stayed decreased for years, well, that would be a very exciting thing. And so the duration of responses is very important. And then eventually, of course, we will report, well, what happened as far as whether patients were cured or not? How long did they live after getting enrolled on the experimental treatment? Now, if, on the other hand, the tumour grows during the phase 2 study, well, ordinarily, patients would stop receiving the experimental therapy and then they would go off the study therapy altogether. So if tumour progression occurs, well, that indicates that the treatment isn't working and so it should be stopped, and then other options for therapy have to be looked for and considered. Next, I just want to say a few words about the statistics in a phase 2 study. When you conduct a clinical trial, normally as part of the team, you have a statistician, so an expert on statistics. And these people are normally super experts on statistics or biostatistics. A lot of the time they have PhDs in statistics. And they can look at the historic data from other trials, the experience of new drugs in other trials, the level of responsiveness that the tumour has had to other drugs in other trials, all of these things, and work out some sort of model or prediction for what you might see in a phase 2 study. And a key thing is to have something called a stopping rule. So if we were enrolling patients on a phase 2 study, parents are consenting to have their child treated on a phase 2 study of a new cancer drug, we don't want to just keep enrolling patients and enrolling patients if the drug doesn't seem to be helping any of them. So there will always be something called a stopping rule in a phase 2 study. And this is a rule whereby if patients are treated and none of them are having a response to the drug, or hardly any of them are having a response to the drug, then the study would be stopped without continuing to enroll dozens and dozens and hundreds of patients onto the study. So there would be a data safety monitoring board in place, and there would be the statistical rules in place, and all of these things are there to protect the patients from continuing to be enrolled on a trial if it turned out that the drug didn't seem to be helping any of them. So it may be, for instance, that the rule says, well, if after 14 patients, none of them have had a tumour response, well, then we can be 80% certain that the response rate is below whatever it is, and therefore we should stop the study. That's an example of how a stopping rule would be written. On the other hand, they may say that if one out of the first 9 has a response to the drug, well, then we should continue for another X patients and continue to monitor the situation. On the other hand, if we find that the drug is working well and we're seeing a high response rate, well, it may be that the trial is extended to collect more data and to further confirm what the response rate really is. So there's all sorts of people supervising phase 2 studies to look out for the patient's rights and to avoid continuing enrollment on trials of a drug that doesn't seem to have any activity. So that's it for phase 2 trials. Again, phase 2 studies in cancer are normally conducted in situations where existing treatments have been used and have failed, or else where the existing treatments are sufficiently ineffective that you might start straight away with an experimental therapy. So patients enrolled on phase 2 trials are normally in a pretty serious situation with the cancer. They only get enrolled on these trials if the parents or the patient consent and sign the consent forms. The phase two studies are being supervised by the ethics committee, by the data committee, by statisticians, all sorts of groups. And the key thing that's being worked out in a phase two study is to see if there's some preliminary evidence that the drugs have some effect against cancer. So we're not measuring how many are cured and are free of cancer 5 or 10 years later as the main question. Yes, we're measuring those things, but the main question is what happens to the cancer in those first several weeks and months after giving the drugs? Does it respond by decreasing in size or in leukemia level, or does it not? And eventually we want to determine something called a response rate. And if the response rate is encouraging, well, that would suggest that the drug has some activity against a particular sort of cancer. And then you might consider whether to go on to a big phase three study to add in this treatment and compare it to the existing standard therapies. Thanks again for tuning in to Understanding Childhood Cancer. I hope this has made sense. I'll go on to phase three trials in another episode shortly. Remember, you can leave me some questions or comments at the Facebook page. Just look for Understanding Childhood Cancer with Dr. Jeff, and you can leave questions or comments there. But I'll leave it there, and I'll talk to you next time. Bye now.